The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
It's here. I've been telling you for years that the socialist Marxist takeover was underway. And I don't know that I've ever had a better sequence of stories here locally than today to illustrate that point and to prove how correct that point is. We're coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studios. Welcome to The Big Show. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top story.
And let's start with how in a socialist regime, there are certain power brokers who have access and have the ears of leaders, how they will control things. And more, the average middle class, working class person will not. A couple of weeks ago, Jay Inslee, and I said it was one of the few times I've agreed with the governor in a long time. But Jay Inslee said, no, it doesn't make any sense to put teachers ahead of other workers in our society for the vaccine.
So if you do other folks, it means one of the older people who might be 100 years of age can't get vaccinated. And I just do not believe that 25-year-old teachers think they should get in line ahead of their 80-year-old grandparents. I fundamentally don't believe that. I think if you ask teachers, they'll tell you they agree with me.
Jay Inslee said teachers agree with him that a healthy 25-year-old teacher shouldn't get in line ahead of their 80-year-old grandma. And he said, we're just asking the teachers to be treated like everyone else.
There's no zero risk. Anytime you step out of your living room, there's some risk, right? There's no zero risk environment.
No, there's not. And he was asked again, why not move the teachers up?
Why not move the teachers and educators up in the vaccine queue if they're going to be back in the schools?
Well, it's because, I come from a family of teachers. My dad was a teacher. My brother-in-law, sister-in-law, all retired teachers. And I know this about teachers. If you go to a 25-year-old third-grade teacher, none of them are going to say, hey, I want to jump in line and ahead of my 80-year-old grandmother or my...
Okay, so he was very consistent on this. And Jay Inslee made sense on this. And once again, proving how crazy this response to COVID is, Jay Inslee did a 180 late yesterday and announced that the state is immediately expanding vaccine eligibility to include teachers and childcare workers. So why is this? When Jay was so right, why did he choose to be so wrong on this? Well, it was because of relentless pressure from the very powerful teachers union that has been holding our kids hostage. And man, wait until you hear the young lady, the 13-year-old I'm going to talk to at 12:30 to hear how bad things are for our kids. They chose to hold our kids hostage. They're holding our families and parents hostage. And Joe Biden finally cracked. Wait, did I say Joe Biden? Jay Inslee finally cracked. But he was agreeing with Joe Biden, who has also said the teachers should move to the front of the line. What about flight attendants who are in a tube? And I heard from somebody who just came back from Hawaii. The plane was packed from Hawaii to Seattle. And the flight attendants, they're stuck in a tube with a couple hundred people for 5 hours at a time. Why don't we get flight attendants to the front of the line? Why do we get to pick and choose? Well, because the teachers' union has access to power, and they threaten to vote people out if they don't give them what they want. Now, you don't negotiate with terrorists. That's a long-time standing policy. You shouldn't cave in and negotiate with groups that have been terrorizing our kids and our families. And I'm not calling teachers terrorists. Don't try to twist that. But you get my point. that because of access to power, they get to move to the front of the line. It's crazy to me. But up next, to prove how socialism has taken over, another thing that, and this is pure Marxism now that we're talking about. Government has taken over private property. And I've talked to many of these property owners who are just heartbroken because they can no longer collect rent because government has taken over their property and said, eviction moratorium, we will not allow you to kick anybody out. And so there are a lot of deadbeats who are taking advantage of that and just not paying their rent. I saw Q13. They talked to a guy named Roger Telsey. He is a retiree in Gig Harbor. All of his income is from property he owns here in Seattle, and he can't collect rent. And none of the tenants will leave. He can't do an eviction. He told Q13 News.
If we didn't go get anything for 3 months, that was okay. We could deal with it. But now it's gone a year, and I'm taking money out of our living expenses every month.
He says that he's out nearly $30,000 in unpaid rent.
We come from poor homes. We've worked very hard to get where we are.
Ah, that's your mistake. You worked hard to get what you own. That's no longer the American way. You're supposed to just be a deadbeat and rely on government. And so now this guy, who is planning on having his apartment building as his retirement income.
By June, I was done. I mean, all of a sudden, it was affecting us financially, emotionally, and at that point in time, my health.
And all landlords are being squeezed. I mean, there are some who have tenants that pay their rent, but they're all under the threat of being seized. So what this is a pure government, illegal, by the way, illegal government takeover of private property. And we have a constitution that says the government cannot take your property without compensation. And so here we're into pure Marxism, where government has just purely, and this goes way back, by the way. You know, I told you about the Critical Areas Ordinance. I was all over that story and issue 15, 20 years ago, when rural property owners in King County, government just said, yeah, you can't use, I don't remember what it was, one-third, two-thirds of your land. You basically have to donate it to an untouchable trust. And so government's been taking private property illegally for years and years and years, in my view. Here's the other thing that happens. There's no more private relationships between workers or workers' unions and the business for which they work. And what we're seeing now is in King County, they are talking about expanding. Seattle has that $4 an hour hazard pay for grocery store workers. And again, why? Why grocery store workers? And, you know, I say this with a little trepidation because at my local grocery store, which is one of the few places I go anymore, I love the people who work there. They're wonderful people. But why would they pick grocery store workers to get $4 an hour pay? And we saw what that happened in Seattle, where Kroger, which owns QFC stores, they announced they're closing two of their underperforming stores because the extra $4 an hour pay puts them too much in the red. And businesses are not in business to lose money. And when government steps in, and again, I don't even know how this is lawful to have government be part of what has traditionally been negotiations between union stores and management. But now government gets to pick the winners and the losers. One thing I would ask on this one, why not talk show board operators like Andrew, and Sean DeTore, who does it the last 2 hours on my show, they have to go into the building every single day. You can't work remotely and engineer a radio show. Why wouldn't they be selected? Well, because they don't have a union that has bought off politicians. And that's literally what happened in Seattle, where the union made what was deemed an illegal donation to Seattle City Council members. And then those council members are the ones who pushed through the $4 an hour pay. Again, it's just purely an illegal government takeover of private negotiations. Q13 also talked to a grocery worker who is looking for... Oh, and I don't know if I finished the reason this is back in the news. The King County Council is talking about expanding the $4 an hour grocery hazard pay countywide. And grocery workers, of course, love
this. We are all put in a very difficult position, and we're just doing the best we can, and we're just trying to get out of there alive.
And Lorena Gonzalez, one of the council members bought off by this union, says...
I hope that this hazard pay goes a ways towards helping you survive this pandemic as well.
And here's a union rep who's thrilled, of course.
Grocery workers are four times as more likely to get COVID than other people, other workers. It's overdue. Obviously, it's welcome that it came from the Seattle City Council, and we're looking forward to other jurisdictions taking this up as well.
And that's what King County is now discussing. But why not other workers? Why has government decided that landlords are supposed to give up their property, that you have teachers who get to move to the front of the line for vaccine now, and grocery workers, government's going to mandate extra pay? There are a lot of other great workers who are going in and doing their job every single day. And they deserve to have the same treatment as everybody else. But no, that's not the way it's working right now. Government has selected two industries to which it will support, enhance, with pay and vaccines. And then one other for you. Also in a Marxist regime, free speech is taken over by government. A King County sheriff's captain has been suspended for a day for an offensive Facebook post about black teens. That's the Seattle Times headline. A Captain Todd Miller, he made what they called a very offensive and racist Facebook post. What he did was he posted a news article and photo of a group of teens beating and stealing the sneakers off a 15-year-old girl on a Brooklyn sidewalk. The teens were black, and the King County police captain or sheriff's captain posted that with the comment, "Animals, this is what the inner city gives us these days." And for that, the government, because he works for the government, has suspended him because they said the word animals was racist. And the guy who posted it, he said, "I made no mention of race. That's an implication others are drawing from what is being said." And then he said, "My intent is not to say that they're racial savages. My intent is to draw a correlation with their behavior." For that, the government has suspended this guy. Now, it's for one day, but still, when that's on your record, that's a pretty nasty thing to have to tote along as you try to work on and build your career. But free speech, a post on your personal social media account saying that people who are beating and robbing and stealing sneakers off a 15-year-old girl on a sidewalk, saying that they're animals, that was arbitrarily determined to be racist. And so I have no idea what word he could have or should have used. Do you? I mean, text me. You certainly can't use the word thugs, because that often has a racial connotation. But what word could you use to describe aberrant criminal behavior of a group of people? And to just assign that everybody is racist, it's an outrageous thing to do. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later in the show as well, because the Dr. Seuss thing, Dr. Seuss's racist books, this is so out of control. It's crazy. And I'll tell you the latest thing it's impacting. All right, so the Marxist socialist takeover, we are in the midst of it. And today we have clear proof of that. And that is your big lead for today.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
We are going to check the news for you. And then I'm going to talk to a 13-year-old girl who has started a movement to get the schools reopened. And she says it's because of the dark mental health place so many kids like her are at right now. We'll talk to her next as the Dory Monts Show gets rolling on this gorgeous Wednesday afternoon. I have been saying that the main reason we need to get the teachers back in the classroom is because of the mental health and the educational health of our students. And I got an email yesterday from a young woman, 13 years old, who has organized a group called Open Schools USA. And she, in this email, detailed the struggles that so many kids are dealing with. Her name is Melanie Gabriel. She joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Melanie, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for coming on with me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So tell me your story. You were in Lake Oswego, Oregon for much of the pandemic. Now your family has moved across the river to Vancouver, Washington. So both states have pretty much been shut down from any in-person learning. How has that affected you, Melanie?
Especially with the whole moving to a new place and not really knowing anybody, my school, my teachers, having really no friends here, definitely played a big part in that as well. And the fact that we're online, it is almost impossible to make friends online. I cannot describe how hard it is to make friends online, because you try and go into the chat and be like, oh, hey, want to hang out or whatever, and your teachers are like, oh, let's not use the chat for off-topic things. But it's been so, like, lonely and draining and just crushing to just log on every day and see black screens. And
I understand that. And you know, it's unusual, so deep into an issue, for an entirely new concept to be introduced to me. But you just have. I had not been thinking about all of the kids, probably hundreds of thousands, who have moved to new areas in the last year. And school is generally the place where you make friends. So I had never thought about all of you kids who have recently moved and have absolutely no pathway to making new friends. That's really heartbreaking to hear. And I know what you said in the email, you mentioned that it's created some serious mental health issues, such as what? How's that manifesting itself?
At least for me personally, I have, like, diagnosed depression, and I take medication for it because of mainly how affecting the online is and how much work I have piled up and how much I stress about that. And I for the most part, I just sit in bed all day on my iPad. And I rarely get out of bed. I rarely go do anything. And it's just horrible.
Yeah. You also wrote that you understand the teachers are afraid of getting COVID. I don't know if I entirely believe that, because there just is no data to support teachers claiming that they are at great risk if they return to the classroom. There's no data to support that from the teachers. But you said something really powerful, and I don't know how deep you want to get into this, but you talked about thinking about suicide, right?
It's gotten to that point, and I've talked to my mom about this, and I've talked to her, and me personally, it's like my teacher being afraid of giving COVID and dying is no different than my mom being afraid of me killing myself someday.
Have you gotten, you said you're diagnosed, have you gotten help for those thoughts, Melanie?
Yeah, I see a therapist once a week, and I go to group therapy once a week, and I am about 7 weeks on medication.
Okay.
I'm getting the help that I need.
And are you doing better? Have you gotten past those really dark thoughts?
Yes, I have. I have been able to suppress those dark thoughts. I think the depression and everything is definitely still here, but my school just recently opened up, and I've been feeling so much better about everything, and my mood has definitely been improving. But the days that I don't go, because I only go 2 days a week, are still those sluggish days that I've always been having.
Yeah, I understand that. And you also said that a lot of your friends are in a really bad place as well. And so what's your message, Melanie? I know we have a lot of teachers listening, because I get emails from them all the time. What's your message to the teachers right now?
My message to the teachers, for the ones who support the things that I'm doing, I thank you and I appreciate you so much. You have no idea. Your words and your wishes that you send to me mean everything. But to the teachers who are on the other side of this argument, I want you to know that we're struggling, and you might not notice it. A lot of my teachers didn't notice that I was struggling at all. I had to tell them that depression and all these things, they are invisible. They aren't just what you learn in the books about how, oh, if you're depressed, it's very obvious. It's not very obvious. It can be so invisible and you have no idea.
Often the schools provide that safety net, because you do have a lot of people watching out for you and who can pick up on things in person that you never could on a Zoom class. I really understand what you're saying. You talked about you led a march across the Tillicum Crossing Bridge in Portland with 100 kids and three parents who had lost their children to suicide. You said something about a self-identified group of teachers. What happened there?
So as we were walking across the bridge and we were almost there, there's this little walk path underneath the bridge. And all of a sudden, these people just start screaming and shouting at us and, like, booing us. And I look over, and it's an adult with her daughter. And both the adult and what I assume was her daughter flipped the entire group off and just started screaming at us, telling us that we were wrong and that we're, like, killing people by wanting schools open. So we just kept marching and decided not to give them any notice, because they're not really worth our time. And if they want to express their opinion publicly like that, go ahead. The only person they're embarrassing is themselves.
Yeah, that is a great attitude about that. Well, Melanie, you're going to be in my prayers. Just know that there are always people you can reach out to when you go into those dark places.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and I'm one of them. I mean, feel free to reach out to me anytime. And real quick, tell me, you've started an organization called Open Schools USA. Tell me about that real quick.
Yeah, so it's a Facebook page that I co-fund with family friend Michelle. And we post on there our events. We post to, like, I think we recently posted a, like, organizer that you fill out that you send to your, like, state representatives and senators to, like, ask them to start a bill to get all schools open. And so we send out a lot of things on that page that are very engaging that everybody can kind of go on. And it's for everyone. It's for adults, for kids, it's for people in school and out school. And we are hosting an event on March 13th, which marks an entire year of being online.
Yep. Yep. Well, great work. You sound like an absolutely fantastic kid, and things are going to get better. I know that for certain, because these things are going to, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So keep focused on that, and I hope you get back in school, that you make a great group of friends, and that you have a lot of happy times ahead.
Thank you.
Okay. It was really nice talking with you. Thanks for coming on with me, Melanie.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. All right. Melanie Gabriel, her Facebook page, Open Schools USA, if you want to check that out. And I do hope the teachers union is listening when you hear stories like this. You can text me 98973. That's 98973. We have lots more to come here in the Dory Monson Show. There's that bumper. I didn't know if I should jump in or not. Hey, I got to say some things about this insane Dr. Seuss story. And that's what it is. It is insanity that is gripping our nation. Just 4 years ago, Kamala Harris, on March 2nd, it's Read Across America Day, and the reason March 2nd was selected because that was Dr. Seuss's birthday. And Kamala Harris sent out a tweet, oh, the places you'll go, and celebrating Seuss and celebrating Read Across America. Now, a lot of places have removed Dr. Seuss from any connection to Read Across America. Both President Obama and President Trump mentioned Dr. Seuss on Read Across America Day. Joe Biden would not. And that's because the left is now going after Dr. Seuss, as you have no doubt heard. They say that six of his books are racist. I've seen those headlines everywhere today, these racist books. Let me tell you something. A book is made up of paper and ink. A book cannot be racist. A book's author can be racist, but there's no such thing as a racist book. There are racist authors. Now, then you get to Dr. Seuss. Is there any indication that he was a racist? Absolutely not. There's none. In fact, one of the books, one of the complaints was he had a line about a Chinaman who eats with sticks. And I think he wrote that in the 1930s. And the Chinese person had yellow skin in the illustration. Well, about a decade later, Dr. Seuss said he's become more enlightened, and he changed it, softened it a bit, and said a Chinese person who eats with sticks, and that person was no longer yellow-skinned. So he even started to make adjustments as mores changed. But for somebody in 2021 to call a guy who is writing books and has enriched the lives of almost every one of us, and the connection to my girls reading Dr. Seuss books when they were very little is a cherished memory. We had a kid bookshelf in our living room, and we would tell them all to pick out a book they wanted, and so often it was a Dr. Seuss book that they wanted read to them when they were 2 years old. There's no indication that Dr. Seuss is a racist. So on Fox last night, civil rights attorney Leo Terrell and American University professor named Dr. Omikongo Dibinga they argued about the Dr. Seuss cancellation.
Who's been harmed by these books? Let me give you some historical context. As a teacher, as a civil rights lawyer who knows what discrimination is, those books are historical books. Those books talks about the weaknesses, the flaws of this country and how this country has grown. I asked you on the radio show, and I asked you on national TV. You name me one person, first and last name, who's been harmed by any of these books. You cannot do it. You talk about racism. You tell me where this racism exists. The city, the state, the person in charge. How dare you come on this program and talk about racism? Talk about these books. Now, I'll ask you right now on national TV. Give me the names of the people who have been harmed by these books. First and last name, so we can find out. Because I don't think you can name them. Go ahead, name them. On TV right now.
I think it was Julian Bond who said that America literally translates into...
Oh, there we go. Julian Bond. If you want Julian Bond was not hurt by Dr. Seuss.
Hold on. So I got a question.
Wait.
For you. I got facts.
Professor, he asked you a fair question.
Yes, it's a fair question.
Is there anybody... Hang on, sir. We just heard from Michelle Obama and Barack Obama. Everything you need to know, you can learn in a Dr. Seuss book. Now, Leo's asking you a question. Can you name any specific people harmed by this book, these books?
Sure. I can name the black community that has been harmed by this book. So if you're asking me if I'm going to talk about Amir Johnson.
You don't say that. You don't represent me. For you to sit here and say that is a lie.
I am definitely not trying to represent you. You are right.
You don't speak for the black community.
I'm definitely not trying to represent you, but I can answer your question.
You are definitely a Democratic
I can answer
point.
Your question. Look.
You don't speak for the black community.
Give me a first and last name. We can go back and forth and yell all night. I didn't come here for that.
Because you can't give me a name.
Just like on the radio show, you got loud words, but no experience. Stop spreading racism.
All right, let me ask about society. Hang on.
Okay, so that was the back and forth. Both of the guests were black men, and nobody's hurt by stuff like this. I mean, Leo Terrell is right. Nobody is hurt by Dr. Seuss books. It just doesn't exist. It's a fantasy. And Jimmy Kimmel talked about this last night. He was absolutely right with what he said.
This is how Trump gets reelected, by the way. Cancel Dr. Seuss, cancel Abe Lincoln, melt down Mr. Potato Head's private parts and throw them at the Muppets. This is his path to victory the next time around.
Ooh, even a far left guy like Jimmy Kimmel says the left has gone nuts. Best 15 coming up next.